Welcome to Sex Psychic Psychedelics. I'm Jane Garnett, a licensed psychotherapist, and I'm here to accelerate your personal growth. Because life is too short to not get turned on. Yes. So my guest today is Ali Hoffman, who is the founder and the host of The Feels, a conscious dating event that's spreading through American cities like wildfire. I had the pleasure of attending this week as an observer, and I was very, very impressed. Ali, I feel like where we intersect is in this sort of personal growth arena, and sex psychics and psychedelics is all about providing fuel for rapid personal growth. I kind of felt like your event fit into that description. How do personal growth and conscious dating intersect? And welcome, by the way. Excuse me.
Thanks so much for having me. What comes up in that question for me is a deep belief we have that the feels is first and foremost a love letter that you will write to yourself throughout the course of the night. And what I mean by that is it's an invitation over and over to return to one's body, to say kind things to your body, to tell your beingness, thank you and I love you. Like really, it is more than anything a chance to drop into present moment awareness. And our belief is that when we are in that state of nervous system regulation, when we are in that place of groundedness, that there's a spaciousness that gets created. And it's that spaciousness, that openness, that's the juiciest to connect to another. So we don't base our success on how many matches, how many people went home together, how many phone numbers were exchanged, as much as we base it on how good and grounded in you did you feel, and how kind were you able to be to yourself throughout the course of the night. And you know, I think that we sometimes we think that, you know, like personal growth is in service of our relationships to others. You know, like I want to be a more blank so that I can show up more blank with my blank blank blank. And what we really believe is that this is an inner world game that we're all playing, and we incentivize through the event, i.e. like we are, you know, to love and to be loved is a most primal, innate urge. We are pair bonding herd animals. And the feels is a dating event, but the feels is really a personal journey that we hope to be a small part of yours.
Wow. You know, it's funny. I have a wonderful boyfriend partner now, which was great news, but your event almost made me want to be single. Nothing about the relationship, but you know, I was like, gosh, if it had been like this in Los Angeles when I was single, it would have been a complete game changer because, I mean, look, it's LA, so the visual is very, very dominant anyway. We're in this like super duper looks culture here. I mean, we are at large, but I would say especially in LA. And then you add the apps to it, and then the visual gets even more dominant. So the visual is just like so, so huge. And there's nothing to get you in your head like the visual and this kind of, I know for me, you know, these sort of thoughts of like, gosh, am I too old to be in the dating? Am I boobs big enough? I mean, God, you fucking name it. You know, in this town, it just gets really ridiculous. And so you're starting out in this realm of kind of self-objectification, which is a really a disassociated place. And so I so appreciated how the focus of your event was about kind of, well, like there was quite a lot of work with eyes closed. So it was getting out of that kind of visual dominance. And it was about getting into those feelings that exist inside the body. So you were kind of counteracting the disassociation that takes place, not only, I think, through that sort of the paranoia around kind of the visual dominance, but the disassociation that takes place through nervousness. You know, it's pretty nerve-wracking. Either you don't like someone and that's, oh shit, how am I going to break it to them? And or you like someone and you're worried they're not going to like you. I mean, it's really nerve-wracking stuff. So let's talk about this eyes closed business, because you started your whole event pretty much with inviting people to have their eyes closed.
Yeah, thanks for the question. I haven't been asked before, but I really love it because, you know, what we hear all the time, and even as having done my event, I get to do my event now sometimes. And what I've realized and what I hear is that people will constantly say things to me like, you know, it's not somebody I would have normally been attracted to, but I had such a cool connection, you know? And I think that that stems from how much we rely on our cognitive systems, myself included. You know, I'm so guilty of being like, well, you know, how much money does he make? Where does he live? Would his friends be fun to hang out with? Would my friends like him? Like, would he fit in with my family? We can default to those systems so quickly. And what the feels does is hold that there is ancient, infinite wisdom in our bodies. And if we can leave our heads and give over to body and to spirit, right? Like, and I don't want to sound too woo, but there really is something about suspending the noise and instead be in a felt experience of somebody else's energy, somebody else's ability to hold eye contact, somebody else's ability to take a deep breath and really be with that. And we are communicating so much to each other non-verbally and verbally, consciously and unconsciously. And what the feels is it's really a download of a code that's saying like, this will actually give you a much better data set on whether you want to connect in deeper with somebody than your typical dominant set of questions. And it's not just like, oh, you person that's so shallow. Like, I do it too. And you're absolutely right. Like, dating apps have allowed a lot of bad behavior to proliferate, but it's not our fault. Meaning there's so little that gives us the material we need to understand if this is a deep connection.
Wait, and what do you mean? Sorry, so, what do you mean by synaptic tissue?
Meaning the 3D realm is going to keep us at a surface layer, right? All we have available to what you were saying about the visual, all we have is very visual, very surface. You know, it's been deliberately designed to hold our attention. So it's like, you know, two truths and a lie. Like, I am not going to understand someone's humanity through two truths and a lie. It's not going to happen for me. Now I might get like an initial set of information about whether I want to connect in deeper, but I'm actually going to get a much more accurate, vibrant, felt, truthful set of information if I sit across from somebody and I look them in the eye and I breathe with them and I understand like how able is this person to be present? How able is this person to be with me? How able is this person to meet me? How able is this person to show up for me? And I really do believe we can only show up for other that to the extent that we're willing to show up for ourselves. So we're getting so much information about to your line of rapid personal growth, rapid inner growth, inner change. Like the journey begins with us and with our own willingness to know ourselves, and then we bring that into a space like the feels, and we say, hey, this is me, and then we're looking and saying to other like, oh, do you see me? Do I see you? Do I want to go forward with this? So it's a much different kind of relating. And it's the kind of relating that I hope proliferates because, and sorry, this is going to take us down a semi, you know, separate road, but I really do think we're aware that we're fatigued by apps. Like we're aware that they don't feel good. We're aware that they've left us depleted, but I don't know if we fully understand why. And I think that like we also haven't come to terms with how normative mistreating each other has become. And what I mean by that is we are ghosting each other and we're breadcrumbing each other and we're gaslighting each other. Sometimes we know we're doing it and sometimes aren't. Like I'm guilty of it. There's chats in my field and Hinge that I have just vacated, you know, that I have not closed, that were thoughtful. And, you know, somebody was really sharing with me and I was just like, and that's because these apps are optimized for matches. They're optimized for connection. And so we have a responsibility, I believe, to treat each other better and to show up with more honesty and more mutual responsibility. But I also, you know, I think it's really on the dating industry and those of us that care and are talking about this to say like, hey, it's time for something different. Because this way that we've been doing it, it's not working as far as creating lasting, enduring, healthy relationships is concerned in comparison with the volume of how many people are engaging with it. Like, sure, we can all be like, yeah, they met on Hinge and now they're married for sure. But if you look at the millions and millions and millions of people and the tens of millions of hours spent, like it doesn't balance out with like the X number of couples that are now married, I believe. So I'm here for new solutions and new ideas.
Well, I'm so glad that you are. I mean, gosh, there's so much I want to talk about around this. It's just like ridiculous. I mean, I think one of the things I'm really enjoying about what you're doing is this kind of unlearning of assumptions. So we're talking about, you know, the assumptions of what I want in terms of, you know, how people look and how people profile. But I also think it's sort of the unlearning of assumptions about, yeah, what you want and what you need. So in the culture that I would say you and I are kind of loosely in, there's a lot of kind of manifestation talk. So there's a lot of like, you know, typically I think there has been this sort of like, you know, you write out your list and then you go after it and, you know, you make it happen. If you're spiritually strong enough and you take enough ayahuasca, then yeah, you could get this shit done. You could get your king and you can be the queen and the whole thing can work out. And I would say that's not total. It's not total bullshit. Okay. There's something in it, but there's something so fucking childish about it as well. It's like, you know, a toddler saying, I want. And so I think, yeah, there's a value in being honest with yourself. Like for me, it took me a while to be honest enough to say, yeah, I do actually find tall men really attractive. I sort of thought I'm too complicated. I thought it was too cliched and I couldn't admit it. Okay, so fine, admit it. Great. I like tall men. But then after that, let it go. So it's sort of like, you know, yeah, admit to yourself what you want, but don't feel like you have to have it because you might miss something much better in the process. So in my process of this is I did eventually write the list, you know, of exactly what I wanted. And then I let it go. And then I came to something that I thought was better, which is more of a sort of felt sense or imagining how I would like to feel with a partner. And what I got to after a lot of work was I'd love to be with somebody who helps me feel relaxed deep down inside. So still working on that. But it for me, it was so much better to map through an idea of a feeling than a fucking shopping list.
Yeah. So... What comes up for me in what you're sharing is something I work through a lot with my therapist, which is there's nothing wrong with you. And what I mean by that is for so long, as I would go through these different dating highs and lows, but especially in the lows, my default response was like, oh, I could just figure out what's wrong with me. And then my egoic mind wanted to believe if I could just figure out what was wrong with me, then I could fix it. And if I could fix it, I had control. And if I have control, then I feel it's like what you're saying, like that kind of toddler, like I feel good because I can control it. And it's like, no, it's actually chaos. And that's it's a much harder reality to accept that, you know, I'm 40. I'm single. I want to have a baby. There's definitely a part of me that wants to be like, well, if I just go to one more ayahuasca ceremony, or if I go to one more manifestation workshop, or if I hire this, you know, this person who's going to help me release my blocks from when I was 8 around accepting love. And, you know, if I could just like be more accepting of my stomach, which I hate the shape of, whatever it is, like then he will come. And like, I've especially over the last like year really come to realize like, that's fucking bullshit. I hope swearing is okay on your thing.
Definitely.
And all it was this desire to believe that I had control, because it's a lot harder in some ways to accept like, I'm 40 and I want a baby and it's not happening, you know? And so it's a lot easier to be like, well, if I just sign up for this one more workshop, then I'll have done everything I could possibly do. Mm. And I don't actually believe that anymore. What I believe instead is that my opportunity, my gift, my here and now is to be like in the utter perfection of what is, you know, like what is that I'm here talking to you. What is that I'm in this home that I love. What is that I get to live this waking dream of a work life. What is that it's cold out outside right now here in New York. Like I'm just like much more into the truth of what's here and now. And that's the only thing I found to give me the peace that I was looking for. And it's not to say I still don't carry a sadness, especially around the baby part, because I would be absolutely lying if I said that when I tune into that, it's so deep and so real and so alive. And yet I'm deeply in the joy and the perfection of the present moment reality of my life. And I'm not in the waiting room of my life. Like there was so long when I was wanting partnership so bad, I treated my life as though everything was incomplete because I didn't have my person, and everything would have this kind of trail to it. Like, oh, this trip's really fun, but it'd be so much better if my person were here. Like, oh, Burning Man sounds so great, but it would just be so much better if I had a person. Like down to like, oh, changing this light would be so much better if my person were here, you know? Wow. And it's like,
yeah, not. Taking out this trash. Tell me about it.
right? Like, everybody else have a person. I know.
But
it was
You go.
All I'll say is I realized is it was a really cool, well-developed way to stay from being present. Because as long as I was waiting for this future perfect reality when my person was going to come, I didn't have to be in this one. And that was where pain was coming from. So being here is the only place I know how to be Allie and happy and joyful. So I stay here.
I love it. And I'm trying to put it into a nutshell. Okay, so the movement is from personal improvement in order to arrive to personal growth in order to thrive with others. Now, I'm flagging that not just because I'm saying, okay, that's your journey. I think it's an ongoing reframe because, yeah, you're out of the relationship and you want to be inside the relationship as if it's a structure, a shelter, an umbrella that you can just stay under. But the truth is when you're under that umbrella, the umbrella keeps moving because the person doesn't act how you want, or you suddenly feel insecure or whatever, right? So you know, we discover this and rediscover it, that there is no there. So what you have to, I feel like now being partnered, I'm having to sort of relearn the lessons that I was learning anyway while I was single, which is like, oh fuck, there is no there. And there's, you know, there's that beautiful illusion that keeps resurrecting itself that like, if you just X, then you'll get to X. One thought that's been serving me a lot recently has been about just thinking about connection as sort of like connective tissue. And the idea thinking about connection as something that obviously exists between us, but that we can serve the connection itself, that it's not so much about you or me, it's about this invisible tissue that exists between us that's part of a beautiful web that has gotten frayed over time for all the reasons. And this idea that maybe collectively we can work towards repairing it. And when I was at your workshop and I looked across this room and there was one exercise that you were doing where it was a silent exercise and people were sitting on the floor back to back and there was an invitation for one of the people and the partner to lay their head a little further back, like rest their head against the person's head behind them. And there was a sort of feeling of like a kind of collective sigh of relief. And I felt like in that moment, the sort of connective tissue of the room was being served. It was something greater. It wasn't about what's going to happen. It wasn't about this person's name or that person's name. It was about this beautiful thing that exists between all of us. And I find that quite a special idea because kind of gets you out of the fucking lonely ego for a minute.
Yeah. You know, I've never thought or put conscious thought to this. So you need to edit it. but I do think that there's other channels we get to tune to when we turn thought off, when we say there's something beyond this baseline consciousness realm. And I think that a lot of the somatic experiences at the feels are an invitation to turn that buzzy brain-y level off. And to what you're saying, I think when 70 people attempt it at once, there's something new that has space. A new channel to tune to, new information that can come in, you know, similar to the information that comes in when we do psychedelics. And I think, you know, something I speak to a lot as well is how influenced I am by the work of Joseph Campbell and the Hero's Journey, which the monomyth says that we go out, we face some kind of challenge, we overcome it, we return heroic. And the feels is a microcosm of that, right? Like over and over, you're being asked to go out, face a bit of discomfort, face a bit of anxiety, face a bit of fear, share of yourself, and then come back to yourself. And in the process, potentially connect deeply with another. When we are brave enough to do that, new information becomes available, whether we're consciously downloading it or not. And then doing it en masse is always a really fun one. And you know, I don't want to make this stuff sound more complicated than it is. Like this shit is elegantly simple. Like it's two humans back to back with their eyes closed, breathing. And tuning into the available sensations. You know, it is not like we are implementing something where we're putting nodes on people's, you know, the sides of people's heads. Like this is really simple stuff. Like it's really simple stuff. And we can dress it up how we want, but like I think a lot of it is like just returning to our baseline state. You know, we all were wandering around at one point with like no clocks. You know, telling our cycle, like telling time according to like women's cycles, like there's a naturalness that we have available that is there, sort of a chaos, a divine feminine that's there for us to tune into if we choose to, an ecstatic that got implemented before ration, reason, and logic took hold. And I don't, you know, we don't talk about it this way in our marketing materials because people would freak out. But it is there with us. I'm really into the work of Carl Jung. And I think he helped us understand this all, like the birth of consciousness.
Well, no wonder we're on the same wavelength. I went to Pacifica Graduate Institute where the Campbell Libraries are, which is a completely Jungian course. So yeah, I'm with you on that. And the sort of, and I think in some ways what we're talking about as well is kind of collective unconscious and speaking to the collective. I want to go back, though, to something that you were just talking about before this, which was bravery and discomfort, and bravery obviously ties in with Campbell and the hero's journey. But, you know, I was saying at the beginning of our conversation, oh, blah, blah, I wish I'd been able to participate in your class, la, la, la. But it's not the whole truth, because also I was like, oh, thank God, I don't have to go through the discomfort of that, like 3.5 minute eye gazing exercise, and, you know, or yeah, like totally. Ask somebody, will you partner with me, or reject someone when they say, you know, totally. I mean, there were these moments that I was just like, oh shit. I've done a million eye gazing exercises and I still find them super uncomfortable and interminable. And yeah, I think actually for me though, the most uncomfortable bit to watch was this exercise where you had, and I know this particular one was sort of hetero based, you had the men and women walk around to a piece of music, and it started with the men asking the women, will you pair with me? And then the women had to say yes or no. And I was like, as soon as I heard that, I was like wincing. I was like dying. I was squirming. And I was almost feeling like, I mean, for me as like kind of extreme empath, the idea of someone rejecting someone else, I just wanted to like jump in the middle of it and like take the hit myself or something. Like, I find that really hard. And I have also in dating before, like yeah. that horrible moment when one person says, I don't want to do it again, or, you know, wherever that shoe is, it's just rough. Yeah. Oof. What do you think about that? I mean, I thought that was pretty brave to like have people do that, honestly. Scary.
You're referring to the part of the format where they have to choose their pairs. And it's true. Like, I put them in the first one, and then the second, the third, and the fourth, either a male body gets brave and tunes into a female energy and asks her. And then she, you know, the female part of the pair says either yes or no. And, you know, I go back to this, like, it's like that, you know, let's say it's a 2.5 minute experience is very much a microcosm for our lives, meaning we are all going to have experiences where we have to get brave and speak into what we choose and what we want and what's calling to us. And then we are also all going to have experiences where we have to tune into our yeses and our nos and speak truth from that place and really like defend our preferences and defend our choices and defend our right to say yes or to say no. And, you know, something that's really interesting to me is many times after the event, I've heard it from both men and women, but I hear it significantly more from women. Women will come up to me and say, you know, I didn't really want to be in that pair, but he asked me and I felt bad saying no. And then they feel bad that they let themselves down. And I think that the greatest trust journey we'll ever go on is us with us, meaning my life will be spent building and nurturing my own self-trust. Like, do I trust me with me? And those moments become a playground for whether or not I'm able to speak into my yeses and my nos. And to own them. And you know, as a community, we talk a lot about rejection. You know, like each city has its own alumni thread. And one theme that's come up a lot is rejection and how to deal with somebody in that moment saying to you, no, and having to kind of keep going and then ask another person and another person. And you know, one thing that has come up in those conversations that I really believe is so beautiful is something to the effect of rejection is redirection, which is to say, like, if somebody's a no to you, then it's actually a gift they're giving you in saying, hey, no. But if I do that, then there's a higher chance you're going to go find somebody that's a yes. Versus me sitting with you in this experience the whole time being like, oh, I wish I wasn't here. Oh, I don't want to do it. You know, like that's actually a lie and not healthy. And so I'm really here for all the truth living in these spaces and then becoming practice grounds, you know, practice spaces for the truth to live.
Yeah. I mean, what is that thing of, because I would definitely, I mean, probably definitely fall into the category of that woman who didn't want to hurt somebody's feelings and so said yes. Because I'd be like, oh, fuck it. It's just a partner exercise. And who knows, you know, maybe something nice will happen or whatever. Maybe I need to save them, poor thing. You know, well, I mean, but I do wonder about that. I mean, I know that I've erred on, you know, being overly worried about, you know, other people's feelings, sort of natural codependent. I mean, obviously, I ended up being a therapist. So, you know, go figure. But I mean, what is that? Because I think there's also some sort of maybe omnipotence in that, like me thinking it's so important what I say to someone, or, you know, I mean, I don't know. But like, it's just a tough one, honestly, Ali. I think it is. I think it is. I would listen, feel,
I, you know, I yeah. don't think there's a, there's no, this is right, this is wrong. There's no, yeah. like, it should be this way, it shouldn't be this way. You know, like, to what you're saying, like, let's say you say yes and you surprise yourself and it's an amazing connection. Let's say you say yes and you sit there the whole time and are like, I shouldn't have. That becomes information too that you yeah. can use to say, oh, cool, that's great about where I'm at. Something I want to maybe work on, you know, or not, like all of it's okay. Like I, you know, I try to avoid the binary of this is right, this is wrong. This is how it has to be. This is how it should be. And just yeah. instead be like, it's all the things at once.
I do think being able to do it is very important. I mean, it's interesting. If I think about my daughters who are 13 and 17, I want them to be able to say the very clear yes and the very clear no. With me, my standards are a bit different. Yeah. I'm like, oh, I can handle this. And I know I can say no. If someone's being an asshole, I have no problem with that. But if they're sort yeah. of a sweet person looking for connection, that's harder for me. But yeah, I want my girls to be able to navigate this world with speed and precision, ideally, and less of the wafting around that I've done along the way.
If they're up, if they're experiencing speed and precision, there'll be something that gets lost there too, you know, like yeah. maybe there'll be something that they didn't get, you know. It's like, again, yeah, like there's yeah. no like, oh, Jane's way is the right way, there, you know. It's just like yeah. it just yeah. all is. And yeah, and I think like when we tell ourselves like, is this how it's supposed to be, then we cause yeah. pain, then we when yeah. then we navigate suffering.
Yeah, yeah, I see. So you're just navigating some very clear learning opportunities, basically, to learn about yourself and increase your vocabulary, I suppose, as well. Yeah. yeah? Increase yeah, your dating tools.
We say with the – literally, you nailed it. That is – so what I say is the real secret behind the feels is that it's not a dating event. It's a toolkit for better dating. It's an invite – when you're on your next date, or, you know, like on your next date, like with a colleague, like anybody, your mom, like, you know, stop and say like, hey, can I give you a compliment? Like, you know, or like, I hope this is not too inappropriate, but I've been hooking up with guys and like the energy, just like there was this guy once I was hooking up and like the energy was just not a good energy. Like something felt really off. And so I just like stopped it and was like, hey, can we do a 3-minute eye gaze? Like repositioned our bodies.
Oh my God, amazing.
And we did. And it completely shifted everything. And it's like, I want this to be a way that we treat each other and a way that we treat ourselves, you know. And this goes back to like the ecosystem that we're dating in right now. Like, you know, inside something where there is a lot of bad behavior, what does it mean to bring more truth, to bring more kindness, to bring more thoughtfulness, to bring more self-awareness, to bring more, you know, radical ownership. And what you're doing, what I'm doing, it's offering tools to do that, that people yeah. can pick up or put down if they choose.
Absolutely. And I love what you did. And it makes me think about the importance of being able to kind of reorient inside your own body. And I had an experience recently with somebody who was flirting with me, and we were kind of navigating this hug together, and they were trying to make the hug into a sensual hug, and I was trying to make the hug into a playful hug. So we were in a tussle, like kind of like a little physical tussle, but like playful physical, but there was tension there. There was conflict because we wanted different things. And there was a moment where it became genuinely funny and I relaxed for a moment and I leaned into the guy for a minute and, you know, then went back into the tussle. And the guy said to me, "Can I tell you something?" He said it in this sort of like, you know, conspiratorial way. Like, and so I already had a feeling a bit like, oh, here we go. And he leaned in and into my ear, he's like, "You know that moment when you leaned into me and, you know, we experienced this intimacy? I could feel like that was," he said something like "I could feel that was like the real you. And then I felt like you, you know, you contracted again," you know, something. He said something like that. And it was a good moment for me because I realized that in the past, I might have gone into doubt around that moment because I definitely was less inside my own body. In this moment, I looked him in the eye and I said, "No, you know what? I do exactly what I want with my body. I wanted to lean in with you to you then, and I didn't want to lean into you just because you preferred that bit. It doesn't mean there was any more truth in it. Yeah. So don't try and destabilize me." And, you know, yeah, there is manipulation in dating. And there are people who are, yeah, in this subtle ways, gaslighting. And there are people who don't know themselves very well. And that's a lot of people. And there's no shame in it. It's just how it is. And we're all on a journey of getting to know ourselves better. And being able to come home to yourself and say, "No, what is real for me? What is true for me? What is actually happening in my body?" And communicate that to someone. And sometimes it just takes some slowing down and reorienting, right? I think that's super important. And it's really hard to do that in the acceleration of nervousness on a date when the train has left the station. I mean, I remember this so much, is that sort of feeling of like, it starts to gallop and you're like, "Oh, well, I know it's a bust, but like, whatever, at least we can find something funny to talk about, or I'll imagine telling my friend about this later," or whatever. And there are these sort of layers of disassociation that kick in. So by the time the date is over, like, you couldn't be more removed from each other. So yeah, I mean, I like what you're saying, and it's certainly bold to initiate a 3-minute eye gazing. And I'm impressed that the guy or the woman, whoever it was, went for it.
Amazing. I mean, you have zero choice. But one thing I wanted to say about your example, which I thought was so powerful, and I love how you got into the texture and the humanness of what was happening in that interaction, is the role of projection, you know, like, and the role of story, meaning what came up for me around what you were describing is like, he was projecting onto you and he had a story of what that was. And, you know, you were then able to say, like, "Actually, this is my story. This is my truth, my experience of this." Mm. And I think that, like, we get to be in the magnitude of that, right? And it's not about whether this story or that story is correct. It's about how able are we to communicate to ourselves and other about what's present and real. And how able are we to, like, peel back that first layer.
What do you mean magnitude? That was an interesting word. Be in the magnitude of that.
The phrase back. So be in the magnitude of was it the magnitude of the story?
Yeah, you were talking about the different stories and being in the magnitude of kind of sorting through the stories, something like that. Don't worry if you can't find it.
I think there's something, I think there's something so powerful that happens when we're able to communicate a layer deeper. Like, that's where the richest, heartiest material comes from for me. So something I will try to do, whether I know a person well or not, is own multiple layers of the experience. And what I heard you say is you did that too, in that you were saying, like, "Actually, what feels true for me is that I felt a call to be in this, and I feel deeply like connected to my body and my inner world and my knowing." And I'm really interested in that. And I'm really interested in being able to say, like, here's what feels alive for me. And then here's even a layer deeper, especially when, as you're saying, like crunchy stuff comes up when we're relating to each other. And, and I'm ever more interested and ever more calling myself forward to communicate about the crunchiest parts, because that's who Allie is. And what I found is that, like, when I Allie as much as I can Allie, then life gets lived in more color, and the people that are around are really my people, you know? Like I want to, as you were saying, like, you wanted to be in a certain kind of romantic relationship. I do too. And for me, it's like, I want to be in a space where all of me can live. So a big part of that is like me being able to communicate, like, here's what's happening in here. I'm not going to, you know, save this so I can go tell a girlfriend as soon as you're not in the room anymore. You know, like, I'm going to really try to like be in this with you and show you and share with you. And see what happens from there. See if more honesty can come take its place at the table of us.
I love what you're saying. And I do think that the us and the we and the communion is the ultimate goal, and that we can't get to that without being in the me. So the way I see it is the growth journey is going from the I to the me, which is the Allie or the Banana Jane or the like the yay, the like, this is just me, I'm alive, yeah. So from the I, which is like, oh, who am I in the world? Ego. To the me, which is the like, the inner yay. To the we, because we can only find the we if we're in our truth, if we're in our true note. So yes, being in the Allie, being up your own Allie is definitely... definitely the way forwards. I think we're definitely on the same wavelength on that, and can therefore connect, right? I'm in me, you're in you, and we can connect authentically. And I can see, it's very clear to see, speaking to you now and also having watched your workshop, that you're a very brave and forthright and curious person. But I still have curiosity on how you got to be so wise about dating. I know there's something more here.
You know, I credit my mom in that I was in therapy when I was 8, and like, if not because, you know, of a seismic traumatic event, but just because I think I probably expressed that I was struggling with some things, and my mom was like, okay, from struggle, here's some resources, let's go. And you know, I have vivid memories of my parents' marriage disintegrating, but us being in a room with two marriage and family therapists who looked at behavior and who looked at body language and who did really deep work with us as a family. And from there, you know, when I struggled with an eating disorder, there was support. Like, I think there was always a culture of and a belief system around the importance of therapy, looking in, knowing, like, I have Know Thyself tattooed on my body from when I was 18. Like, there was always just kind of this like this is what it means to be human and alive, this is what it means to look. And so that kind of got like a little bit obscured as I became an adult and started like working in the world, and I was, you know, I was doing like digital media and nonprofit and, you know, different things, but always feeling like everything I was doing was a lie. You know, I'd started a business when I was 23, and then I started another when I was 30, and then I started another when I was 33 or 34. And each one, I was like, something's not right here. And it wasn't until I really got brought down to my knees in pain and agony over what I was doing and how wrong it was that I got this hit. Like, you're here to help other people be in their truth. That's it. Like, and at the time I was like, I'm the hottest hot mess. Like, how could I ever tell anybody else anything about how they should do or how they should be? And to this day, I still, you know, I'm not here to say like, you have to do it my way. And like, this is the way. Like, I try to hold everything with an open hand. I in the event I say like, you know, if you choose, like, if you feel called, like, everything's an invite, and everything's an inquiry. But you know, I've been so blessed that I've gotten to just like continue to look in and in and in and in and in. And, you know, I also want to demystify that and say, like, I was very lucky and I grew up in a home that was, you know, upper middle class, the Chicago suburbs. Like, there was the resources for all that. And I think it's really important to talk about that too and not make it sound like, you know, isn't everybody the most enlightened version of, like possibly, like I was really lucky in that there was resources and space for me to ask these questions and take breaks when I needed to and go sit over weekends in beautiful spaces in Ojai and then whatever else it is that I've done. And I don't want to negate or ignore that in any way. I think that's a really important part of this. But I, you know, it's always been an inquiry. And I think it's focused on dating right now only because I'm 40 and single, and I'm deeply curious about what it means to date and how to thrive in this ecosystem. And I'm just gonna look at it because I like wrote it like last night. But you know, I in this idea of like always in the inquiry, somebody said I heard last night. I was reading 4,000 Weeks. It was like, you teach best what you most need to learn. And I really feel like that's been true for me. You know, like I don't feel like I am a dating expert by any means. It was just like, this is what I needed to learn. Cause I was trying to grapple with what it means to be 38 and single, 39 and single, 40 and single, whatever I am right now. So it was just like, thank you everybody for being in the inquiry with me. Cause wow, how lucky am I, you know?
That's beautiful. So this is great. Cause I was actually going to ask, you know, do you have any advice for anyone who's like, I don't know, let's just say 40 and single, or just single and struggling? And now I'm going to reframe the word advice to, can we just have a minute of heart to heart, you know, from you to anyone who's listening, who's struggling with being single?
Yeah. Yeah. I would say the same thing I tell myself every day, which is there's nothing wrong with you, you know, like, this is not, it's not because you're not deserving of love. It's not because you should. And these are things I say to myself. Like, I grapple with my own worthiness. I grapple with enoughness. I really honestly every day, like, have to fight this. Like, if only I were prettier, if I were prettier, I'd have my person. Like, I fight that. And so for me, I just come back to, there's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with you, because it is actually just a deep acceptance and a deep love of what is that leads me to feeling alive and joyful. So if I could offer anything, it's that you are perfect and there's nothing wrong with you.
Yay. I second that for all of us. We're perfect hot messes. We're hot, hot messes. And then there's two other things.
I love being messy.
The mess is unavoidable. That's the real truth. We might as well love it. So Ali, two things, and they're quite like this. We've got a micro and a macro, and I'm going to tell you what both of them are. One is, I want you to share a micro detail that's fun from a recent date, something that you enjoyed that was maybe surprising to you, just something small. And then I'd love to wrap our time together with your hopes for the future of the feels.
Yeah. Okay. So I had what's like possibly likely a one night stand on Saturday night. Yeah. And as we were in the car to like separate, you know, like he was going to go this way, I was going to go that way, I just turned to him and I said, like, hey, can we do a thing where we do two prompts back and forth? And the first prompt was something that you did, something that you gave that felt really good for me was dot, dot, dot. And those were a little bit sexy, which was actually kind of fun. Cause I think it's like really great to like reflect each other in that we can quickly be like, oh, I don't want to like say that I loved it when you kissed my neck. Like, you know, it's like, I think it's just like really great to be like, I fucking loved it when you kissed my neck like that. And then, the second one was thank you. I appreciate you cause, which pulls directly from, nonviolent communication. In the work of Marshall Rosenberg, who talks about like judgment-free compliments. And you're really just in an experience of, I'm going to see this person. Like, I'm going to see the human in this person. So even though we were inside this this frame that had like a not just a temporality to it, but kind of a like a oh, that was pretty like that was a whole set of decisions that had like sort of one base urge as the foundation, base intention as the foundation. But we were like, it was still felt really important to me to infuse it with so much kindness. I know this wasn't really like a great dating, I guess it's dating. Sometimes, you know, one time when I say it's really good dating material. And and what was the other one?
The big question. The big one was your dream for the fields, you know, for the future of the fields.
My dream for the fields is that any single person who's thoughtfully approaching dating can walk in a room in their city, whether they live in Memphis or Minneapolis or Miami or Oakland, or anywhere in between, and be, you know, and meet a room full of gooey, warm, open fellow singles, you know, like that there'd be 60 or 70 fellow singles waiting for them the way that there were in that room that you were in on Wednesday. Like I want this to be available to anyone who wants to be brave.
Amazing, amazing, amazing. And I know there's only one of you, but if you ever manage to like proliferate yourself, which I wouldn't put it past you, maybe you could do one for couples too.
Yeah, I mean, we've done that one before. Very hard to stop.
Oh, you have?
That's a whole other podcast.
Okay. We'll do another podcast.
A whole other podcast.
Several other podcasts. Great. Ali, thank you so much. I knew it was going to be fantastic talking to you, and I really appreciate you making the time and coming on the show. Love the work you're doing.
I appreciate you. Yay.
Thanks, darling.
Thank you so much. You as well.